So I'm going to now introduce our next speaker, who is Dr. Melissa Parsons. Melissa is a senior lecturer at the University of New England in Armidale, with broad-ranging and interdisciplinary research interests in social ecological systems, disaster resilience, resilience assessment, large flood disturbances, and river ecology and management. Melissa works at the interface between the theoretical and applied science, examining the ways that concepts such as resilience can be applied to deliver management and policy outcomes. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Sharanjit, and thank you to the Actuaries Institute for your very kind invitation to come and be here today. So, resilience has been described in different publications as the word of the year, an organising approach for radical change, a systems approach to understanding change, and it's also been described as a vacuous buzzword. Now, despite or probably because of these descriptions of resilience, academic publications on resilience have risen over the last 15 years. But at the same time as that academic work is increasing, so too is the adoption of resilience into government policy and programs. And it's actually often government agencies which are at the forefront of applying resilience as a framework for policy and programs. And indeed, that's very much the case in Australian disaster policy, starting over on the left-hand side there with the National Strategy for Disaster Resilience. There's really been a progression of documents that all place resilience as a central organising concept for emergency management and planning, including the Community Resilience Framework, which was recently released by Emergency Management Victoria. You've got the Australian Business Roundtable reports on disaster resilience. And then over on the right-hand side there, you've got a couple of resilience-based frameworks for land use planning and for household disaster preparedness. So what I want to do today is to talk to you about this organising idea of disaster resilience. And I'll do that in two parts. Firstly, by looking at how thinking has developed towards ideas of disaster resilience. Then I'll give you an example of the application of disaster resilience with the Australian Natural Disaster Resilience Index, which is the project that I'm leading with the Bushfire and Natural Hazards CRC. Okay, so how did we get to disaster resilience? There's really been a progression of thought in natural hazard management over the last 100 years or so, from risk prevention through to vulnerability, then through to resilience. These are by no means discrete. They do overlap, and elements of one perspective can be found imprinted into the later perspectives. But let's start at the beginning with risk prevention, which was really the dominant approach to natural hazard management in the first half of the 20th century. Now, risk prevention was largely about government-endorsed engineering solutions to control the physical processes of hazards and to reduce the losses from those hazards. So it was really about the conquest of nature, led very much by engineers and by physical scientists. But then what happened was in the 1960s and 70s, there were some major disasters in developing countries, including Cyclone Bola in Bangladesh, which killed 300,000 people. So these events started to change thinking away from that engineering and science focus of risk prevention, because a whole bunch of social scientists started asking questions about why events of similar magnitudes have very different impacts on people in different countries. And so this vulnerability perspective then arose out of international development work, looking at people-centred issues of sustainability and equity and justice. So vulnerability really is the conditions determined by physical, social, economic and environmental factors which increase the susceptibility of an individual or a community or its assets to the impacts of hazards. But of course, society has changed a lot since the 1970s, when the vulnerability perspective was founded. We're now very much in the Anthropocene. Population has grown, living standards have increased, ecosystems have degraded. The world has become much more complex and much more interconnected. And we have climate change and urbanisation to add to that. So this new perspective called resilience has emerged. In a nutshell, resilience is an approach to understanding, living with, managing and adapting to change, complexity and uncertainty. Resilience acknowledges the agency and ability of people and the communities in which they live to be able to live and thrive and develop within dynamic environments. And this idea of agency and ability and ability to adapt is really quite key to this idea of resilience. Then, of course, natural hazard events are a part of the dynamic world, giving rise to this concept of disaster resilience. There are a whole lot of different definitions of disaster resilience, but what they all tend to have in common is this idea of agency. So people's capacities to prepare for and cope with disasters, and also to learn and adapt and transform in a very dynamic world. So it's really within that perspective of resilience that we're developing an index that can measure and assess the current state of disaster resilience in Australian communities. And we've called that the Australian Natural Disaster Resilience Index. For the first time through this project, Australia will have a standardised snapshot of disaster resilience at a national scale that can support all sorts of planning and policy and community engagement activities. So the index is based around the idea of resilience as capacities. And this is really important because we're assessing the capacities and the structural factors that influence disaster resilience, not the actual realisation of disaster resilience following one particular event. So in a nutshell, over on the left-hand side there, coping capacity is the factors influencing the ability to prepare for, absorb and recover from a natural hazard event. And over on the right-hand side there, adaptive capacity is really about the facilitation of adaptation by governance, institutional and management arrangements and processes. So those capacities are made up of 8 different themes in the index, and there are about 90 indicators that we've looked at across those 8 themes. I won't go too much into the methods, except to say that we've used best practice composite index statistics to compute the index. Today, I'll just be presenting the coping capacity results, and I do need to point out that these are interim findings and they will change slightly as we go in to compute the final version over the next month or so. But what it should do is really give you a broad idea of what the index can show us about disaster resilience at the national scale. So this is the index for the social character theme. And what you're seeing here is a measure of the way that social character influences the capacity to prepare for and recover from a natural hazard event, where lower index values are in red and orange, they're lower disaster resilience, and higher index values in green and purple are higher disaster resilience. Each of those sections that you can see there is a statistical area 2 division of the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and there are about 2,100 of those across Australia. So most of the index values sit at about 0.4, so they're in those lighter orange and yellow shades, with much lower resilience occurring in the more remote areas and inland areas of Australia. So based on this mix of social factors, there's less capacity to prepare for and recover from a natural hazard event in those more remote and regional areas. Here's that same social character index zoomed into Sydney, where the mix of social factors also means that there's quite low capacity to prepare for and recover from a natural hazard event in some parts of Sydney. The same trend occurs with the economic capital theme. Economic capital is the factors that influence, the economic factors that influence the capacity to prepare and recover. So the economic factors that support disaster preparation and recovery are quite high along those coastal areas, becoming lower in the more inland and remote areas. And here is the economic capital index zoomed into Sydney. As you might expect, for a capital city, there are many areas of higher economic capacity for disaster resilience in the purple and blue colours. This is the emergency services theme, which is the capacity and potential of emergency services and health resources to respond to natural hazard events. And on the map, the higher emergency service capacity is concentrated in the east, leading to higher resilience over there and lower resilience again in the west and more remote areas. There's a really good explanation for this. The values are really being driven by remoteness indicators and the lower services per capita and per capita funding that occurs in those less populated areas. This is the infrastructure and planning theme. This is about the capacity to prepare for natural hazards using land use planning, mitigation or emergency planning. New South Wales stands out here as having much higher resilience than the other states. This pattern is actually being driven by the indicators of dwelling age that we took from the Nexus database. There are some issues with that data, which we're currently working on. But if you just take a look at that zoomed into Sydney, there's actually quite a range of capacity planning for planning for natural hazards, ranging from high resilience in the more inner city areas because of very well-resourced councils to lower resilience in some of the outer suburbs, largely because of less well-resourced councils. This is the community capital theme. So this is about the capacity for cohesion, connectedness and coordination. The index values for this theme are quite high along the coasts and in Tasmania. But again, the capacity for community capital becomes lower in the more regional and remote areas of Australia. And if you zoom into Sydney on that one, you can see some areas of higher community capital in blue, as well as some areas of lower community capital in red and orange, particularly in the inner city areas. Lastly, this is the information and engagement theme. This is about the capacity to interact with information about natural hazards. This theme only has three indicators, which really messes with our aggregation function, and the project statistician is currently working to sort that one out. We'll also be computing an aggregate coping capacity and adaptive capacity index, and then an overall disaster resilience index. And again, here we did a draft coping capacity index. You can see that coping capacity tends to be lower in the more remote and regional areas of Australia, while over on the right-hand side in Sydney, there are pockets of that really high coping capacity. Okay, so I'll just wrap up with one last point about the interpretation and utilisation of those results. They're obviously very data-rich. What we're planning is that the index will be reported as a state of disaster resilience report, and we've started a whole lot of work with our project partners from the Bushfire Natural Hazards CRC to design that report using a strengths-based approach to the interpretation of disaster resilience in the spirit of resilience as agency. Where we're up to at present with that is just exploring a whole lot of different ways to present and also to narrate the quantitative index findings in a easily interpretable and well communicated form. And I'll leave it there. Thanks.